The impact is being felt in other ways. The millennials, who are now between 18 and 33, are relatively unattached to organized politics and religion, are linked by social media, burdened with debt, distrustful of people, optimistic about the future, and in no rush to marry. All of these trends are being cataloged and studied by the Pew Research Center, and we're going to spend the hour talking about what they're finding. Kim Parker is Director of Social Trends Research at the Pew Research Center. She is the author of studies on a variety of topics, including aging, the changing American family, generation change, and more. And she joins us from studios in Washington at the Pew Research Center. Welcome to the program, Kim.
Thank you so much for having me.
And sitting right next to her is Carlin Bowman, a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. She writes on public opinion on a broad range of topics, including the millennials and marriage, attitudes towards homosexuality and gay marriage, taxes, abortion, and more. And she also edits the AEI's monthly political report and writes for Forbes.com. Thank you for being here as well.
Delighted to be with you.
Now, the Pew Center reports that marriage rates have been falling, as I said, since 1960. Do we understand why this trend began?
You know, there's a variety of factors. I think a big one is the changing role of women and the increased role of women in the workplace. So women have become more educated over the decades and pursued careers, and that has, you know, made it easier for them to support themselves economically and maybe made getting married and settling down and relying on a man's income less of a priority for women. So that's one thing. There have also been, you know, changes in the economy and a lot of changes that have taken place for men as well, where it's particularly in the, you know, the last decade or so, young men are having trouble establishing themselves financially and perhaps are maybe a little bit less marriageable than they were in the past, whereas women are sort of more empowered and have made gains. And so there's a bit of a mismatch in the marriage market as well, if you think of just what's happened in the last decade or so.
Well, I was going to ask you, which gender is driving this, or is it equal among males and females who make the decision?
Yeah, I think it's an equal sort of push and pull that we're seeing with, you know, broader trends that are shaping the lives of men and women and then making marriage less central to the establishment of financial independence and also the establishment of family. Mm-hmm. Because families are taking all different forms now. The sort of traditional nuclear family of a married mother and father raising their own children used to be the norm, and it's just not anymore. Less than one in four households look like that today.
And Carlin, you are a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, which is a conservative organization. This must be viewed with deep alarm.
Well, I think many conservatives and many other people are concerned about some of the changes that we see in society, but I frankly don't particularly notice it at my think tank. We have a strong group of traditional conservatives and a lot of libertarians, and so people, it's a very mixed bag, I think.
The Pew Research Center discovered that 69% of young people between the age of 18 and 24 and 61% between 25 and 34 believe that society is just as well off if people have priorities other than marriage and children. I want to talk about that philosophy in a second, but how did you gather those numbers?
So that was part of a very large survey that we just conducted over the spring of 10,000 Americans nationwide, and it was a new question. So unfortunately, we don't have a historical trend on that question, but we did see very big differences by age. So older Americans were much more likely to say that society, it's better for society if its members prioritize marriage and children. And younger adults were much more likely to say that it's fine if people have other priorities other than marriage and children. And interestingly, there were gender differences on that question as well. And if you look at gender and age, young women were among the most likely to say that it's not really important for society to prioritize marriage and gender. And again, I wish we had asked it, you know, even 10 or 20 years ago, because I bet we would have seen a change.
How do you explain that? Why are young women particularly putting marriage low on the list? And what are they putting high on the list? Do you know?
Well, some other polling that we've done has indicated that young women are, you know, more career-driven now than women of past generations, and they put a high priority on establishing themselves in a career and also In a recent survey we did a couple of years ago, we found that for the first time, young women were more likely than young men to say that having a high pay, being successful in a high-paying career was important to them, and that, that represented a real shift in perspectives between men and women.
In 2012, and this puts these figures kind of put this whole thing into perspective, in 2012, only 50.5% of all adults 18 and older were married, as compared to 72% in 1960. And you say that if the current trend continues, the share of married adults will drop to below half in just a few years. So what will that mean for society? Can you hear us?
Oh, yes, I got you back.
I'm sorry.
You just went for a second.
I'm sorry. Do you need the question again?
Maybe. That would be
okay.
Good.
I'm just going to say that these numbers put this whole thing in perspective. Mm-hmm. In 2012, only 50.5% of all adults 18 and older were married. 72% were in 1960. So if that trend continues, you say that the number of married adults will drop to below half in just a couple of years. So what will that mean for society?
Well, I think it'll mean a continuation of sort of an evolution that we've seen in family, where family, as I mentioned, doesn't necessarily mean the married mother and father raising their own children. There are many single adults raising children now. There are many adults who are cohabiting and forming families in that way. So I think we'll just see a continuation of that. Now, it's important to note that even though 50% of Americans are currently married, part of that is due to the fact that, as you mentioned in the open, that the median age of first marriage has gotten older. So many young adults who haven't married yet will marry in the future, and most say that they would like to marry. So if you look at over the course of an adult's lifetime, they're highly likely to marry eventually. But even at that, the rates of adults who ever marry are also going down. So it's all sort of a gradual process.
So I'm not certain how to ask this question, but are millennials speeding up the trend, or are they simply adding to it? In other words, I guess, are baby boomers and people who are older taking a different view of marriage now? It's less important to them as well. So collectively, cumulatively, they're adding to the whole problem, or is it millennials that are driving this trend?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think we did have a question that we were able to trend from 1978 to 2010 that asked people whether they thought that the institution of marriage was becoming obsolete. And we found that in 2010, 39% of the public said they thought the institution of marriage was becoming obsolete. And back in 1978, it had been, you know, a much lower number. I think it was around a quarter of the public maybe that thought that. So everyone's views are changing because everyone looks around them and sees that society is different. But I think the millennial generation has grown up with a different set of social norms. So I think I don't know if they're speeding the process, but in many ways and views on not just marriage but specifically homosexual or, you know, gay marriage, millennials are leading the way in terms of their views on that issue, and that spills over into their broader views about family.
So they think that marriage is becoming obsolete, but they're okay with gay marriage because it's obsolete. Why?
I think that when they get the question about, I don't know, that's a really good question. I hadn't thought about that. I think millennials just have a very different view of the world, okay. and sort of more of a live and let live approach to things.
Well, Carlin, you've studied and written about millennials. So what makes them different from previous generations? What forces shaped these attitudes and beliefs that they hold?
Well, it's hard, I think, to draw generalizations about such a big group. It is a very large and diverse group, but certainly one of the things that's driving the changes in attitudes of millennials in many areas is the extraordinary racial and ethnic diversity of millennials. If you look at my age group and the baby boom cohort, we are much more likely to be white and less minority than our millennials. Millennials are much more likely to have significant numbers of blacks, Asians, Hispanics, and that, I think, is probably the most important trend in terms of how this generation is different. Also, they've clearly had very different experiences, and Kim mentioned some of the reasons she thought the age of first marriage was actually rising, and I would add another. You know, millennials millennials have had one distinct experience. A very large chunk of them are the product of divorce. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, the interesting things that we see in data about millennials is that they're skeptical of big institutions. They're skeptical of business, but they're not hostile to it. They're skeptical of government, but they're not hostile to it. And I think they're also skeptical of marriage, but not hostile to it. And so I think that that may also be delaying the age of first marriage. That those numbers have certainly gone up, but if you look at historical data over time as the census is done, the increases in life expectancy actually tell us that we're marrying sooner than mm-hmm. earlier generations.
That's interesting.
Because
I thought of it that
why?
Way.
Because we live longer?
Yes.
So I guess at the stage of life that you're marrying is a little bit...
It's a bit different.
Yeah,
so I guess it could also be said the inverse would be that we are getting married later because we have more time. We don't have to rush into it.
That's a possibility, a possible explanation, but that's exactly right.
But the biological clock still exists.
And that's really interesting because if you look at the number of women at their peak childbearing ages, let's say 40 to 44, and the census has clearly done this, that the number of childless women has doubled since 1980. So that's another very significant factor in the definitions of family and what that means going forward.
Now, what about the role of college? I mean, fewer people are getting married, and the median age is rising. Of first marriage is rising. It was, I think in 1960, the median age for first marriage was 23 for men and 20 for women. In 2012, it was 29 for men and 27 for women. A lot of kids get out of college. They go to college now. They get out of college, saddled with debt. They can't find a job. They go home and live with mom and dad. Not a good formula for getting married, it seems to me. So how much of it has to do with that, this enormous debt and this inability to pay that debt off?
I think that's a very important factor in this. And I think that... The fact that more young adults are going to college is, you know, one of the contributing factors to the raising median age at first marriage, because they just, you know, they want to finish their educations first. But when we look at what's happened in the last, you know, 5 or 10 years and the difficulties we've had with the economy, and particularly during the recession, it's been a devastating time for young adults to enter into this economy and find jobs. And the share of young adults who were in the workforce during the recession was the lowest it had been in, you know, decades. So I think that's not conducive to establishing yourself financially, starting a family. And you mentioned living arrangements, and millennials are really known for moving back in with mom and dad. And, you know, that's not just a myth. We've seen that play out in many different analyses that we've done. And we just put a report out last week on multigenerational living, so the share of adults who live in multigenerational households. And 26% of men ages 25 to 34 who should, you know, in theory be done with their education at that point are living in a multigenerational household, and most of them are living with their parents. So that, you know, as you mentioned, that's not really a recipe for planning a wedding.
I have one of those 26-year-olds living at home, so...
Are they still on your insurance?
No, not anymore. Not anymore.
We have to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about this generation of young people who came up until the recession in probably the most affluent time period the world has ever known, particularly in the most affluent country the world has ever known, and what impact that might be having on their delaying marriage because of lifestyle that they want to have to continue into adulthood. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and new generation of African-American philanthropists, host of the Forum for Civic Leadership, which asks what's community got to do with it, and features Dr. Emmett Carson on August 5th. Details at blackphilanthropymonth.com. Well, how much is enough? How much money does it take for a family to meet the local cost of living? And should everyone who works be guaranteed a living wage? That's a question that some cities around the state have answered in the affirmative by enacting some sort of living wage for their residents, but not Charlotte-Mecklenburg. So we're going to talk about why we haven't done so and whether we should do so tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show. Update on the investigation into the shooting down of a Malaysian airliner on the Russia-Ukraine border. Worldwide outrage over the tragedy and the escalating crisis in Ukraine.
Join the conversation on The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the changing nature of the American family and changing attitudes towards marriage. Kim Parker joins us. She's the director of the Social Trends Research at the Pew Research Center, which did a big study on millennial attitudes toward marriage and on the changing nature of the American family. Carlin Bowman is senior fellow for the American Enterprise Institute, and they're both in a studio in Washington at the Pew Research Center. You know, a lot of these young people, millennials, grew up in a very affluent time in America. Their parents did very, very well. I often think about this. These kids who grow up driving BMWs to high school. I know what I drove to school in my senior year. It wasn't a BMW. but a lot of these kids do, and they live in great big houses. They have, you know, these beautiful homes that they grew up in, and I would presume that they would like to have that in adulthood. And I know that one of the characteristics of millennials is that they on their first job, on their first day, they want the corner office now. So how much of that is driving it, the need to establish yourself in a career to get enough money to perpetuate that lifestyle before you dilute the funds by getting married and having children?
Well, I think, you know, in our data, which is collected, you know, cross-sectional, big national surveys we do, and we analyze census data as well, the sort of stereotype of the affluent millennial, I'm sure those kids are out there, but that's not really the norm. Okay. For young people across America. But I think there is something to the different parenting norms and the way that these kids have been raised. And we asked a question in a survey a couple years ago about when a child should be financially independent from their parent, and we had trend, you know, historical data on that. And the age at which people now think a young adult should be financially independent is much higher than what it was, you know, 10 or 20 years ago. So clearly there's been a shift that parents and society feel now, like, you know, at 18, a kid isn't ready to be out on their own. Now they've got to be closer to, you know, 22 or 25. Hmm. So I think there's been some sort of, you know, kind of sheltering. You hear that this generation was, you know, they had helicopter parents. They were coddled by their parents. We don't really have data to support that, but you certainly do hear some of that, anecdotally at least.
One of the interesting things, I think, Kim, in your data over time was how close these young millennials are to their parents. Mm-hmm. And that certainly wasn't something that described the baby boom generation in terms of, first of all, social media has made it probably easier to stay in touch, but they're actually staying in touch with their parents. So there's a new relationship there that also distinguishes these millennials from other generations.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that's definitely true.
Yeah, and the boomers were certainly rebelling against their parents' generation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Chris emails, let's be honest, lots of baby boomers married because they had to. If a woman became pregnant, she almost had to get married. My mother-in-law did, as well as her sister, and so did one of my aunts. And they were all, quote, good, unquote, Catholic girls. Being forced to marry did not make for happy marriages.
Well, I think when you look at the trends in women in the labor force and the rush of women into the labor force in the 60s and 70s, it coincided with the development of birth control. I mean, that really did allow women to have more flexibility, to do more planning, and to postpone the start of family and childbearing until they were able to pursue other things.
But attitudes about children out of wedlock have certainly changed. It used to be a scandal to have a child out of wedlock. Today, it's the norm.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the norm, but you're right. It's approaching the norm.
It's approaching the
norm. Yeah, and our most recent statistics are 4 out of 10 babies are born to an unwed mother, and there are sharp differences along racial and ethnic lines.
I'm going to say, the reason I said it was the norm is because I have a figure here that says 72% of black children were born to unmarried mothers in 2012. 53% of Hispanic babies were born out of wedlock. 29% of whites.
Yep, those numbers are correct.
And white people are outnumbered by people of color in this country. So it is the norm.
Getting there, yeah.
Well, no, because the overall number is 40%. So, Yeah, not quite the norm. And it's important to note, with, you know, in the context of discussing these changing types of families, many of those children who are born to an unwed parent, that the couple will eventually marry in many cases, and also there's often a father in the home, or the couple might be cohabiting, so the parent isn't always, you know, totally on their own, but you're right, they're not married in those cases.
Yeah, you're certainly correct that the moral acceptability has gone up. Gallup actually has a fairly long trend about what's morally acceptable to you, and they ask about having a child outside of marriage, and those numbers have gone up very, very dramatically. But what I think is most interesting in that Gallup trend over the last decade is Republicans haven't moved at all, but Democrats have moved over 20 percentage points in terms of the acceptability of that over time. And I don't usually look at those things in terms of political differences, but Gallup just happened to note it in its report, and I thought that was absolutely fascinating. Mm-hmm. But they also ask about a lot of other behaviors, assisted suicide and the like, and you've seen some considerable movement. People are still saying, well, this behavior isn't right for me, even though, you know, some people obviously do have children out of wedlock. But in terms of views about the society as a whole, this is where we've seen the new non-judgmentalism.
Yeah, so, I just would want to add to that that we have a series, a question that we ask about changes that are taking place in society. And there are things like, you know, more women in the workplace, more gay and lesbian couples raising children. One of the items is more children being raised by a single parent. There's several family-related items, and the one that the public reacts the most negatively to is the item about more children being raised by a single parent. So the public is very skeptical of this trend. I think the trend is out ahead of public opinion, but opinion is changing and sort of following that trend.
So what's is this? I'm not saying what's driving this, but maybe what is allowing this to happen: the declining influence of religion in American life.
That could contribute to it. Again, I haven't seen data linking the two overall, but I suppose that that's possible. People still say religion is very important to them, though, of course, there are fewer people attending church on a regular basis, and more people calling themselves, I think a term that Pew may have coined, the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, people who have no religious affiliation whatsoever. That group is growing from a small base, but the number of people who attend church regularly has certainly gone down over the last several decades.
Mm-hmm. And that's especially true of millennials. They're one of the least religious young cohorts that we've seen in terms of their affiliation. But again, it's important to point out that part of that may be their sort of resistance to formal institutions and arrangements, and some of them like to think of themselves as spiritual or, you know, active in some other way in religion.
In your Millennials in Adulthood report, Kim, you pointed out that today's youngest adults take a different approach to marriage than the generations that preceded them. And I'm sure we've talked about this in broad strokes, but how would you describe their approach?
Well, I think part of their approach is postponement.
Okay.
If you look at the share of young adults of millennials who were married in 2012, it was only 26. And then we went back and looked at the previous generations at the age that millennials are now, mm-hmm. and it's a stair-step effect. So among Gen Xers, 36% were married at the age millennials are now, and for boomers it was 48, and for members of the silent generation it was 65. So there you can see, you know, the change over time and the fact that millennials aren't sort of embracing and entering into marriage at the same age that the generations that preceded them. And I think there, you know, there's a variety of factors that are contributing to that, which we've alluded to, you know, the educational gains that young adults have made, and the financial and economic difficulties that they're facing, and their, you know, perhaps relationships and ties to their parents. So there's a whole variety of things that are kind of contributing to this.
And despite the fact that there are more people having children without benefit of marriage, they're having fewer children, because in 1960 women had on average, what, 3.7 children. Today that figure is 1.9. When you combine that with declining marriage rates, what does that say to demographers about the direction the country is headed in terms of aging, population, and social services going forward?
One of the demographers, Joel Kotkin, actually wrote a column recently in which he asked the question, is the family finished? Mm. I think that's certainly premature, but he was he was highlighting all of the trends that you've mentioned and we've been talking about. I doubt very much the family is finished, but it's certainly taking new shapes and forms.
Yeah, we've done some interesting work at, you know, looking at aging in society, and you know, the fertility patterns mean that there are fewer babies and fewer young people, but people are living longer. So the age pyramid has actually sort of been turned on its head. And that has real implications for families and caregiving and who's going to provide support for whom. And it also has real implications for our fiscal situation and how we're going to be able to, you know, keep up with entitlement spending and all of that. So all of, you know, that sort of gets us off the topic of family a little bit, but these things are very closely related. These demographic trends have a real impact.
Because, you know, all these social services were predicated on the fact that there would be more people paying into the system than taking out of the system. And that's about to reverse, isn't it?
That's sort of what we're headed for, yeah.
Absolutely. And most millennials don't think they're going to see a Social Security check.
Well, they might be right.
I think a lot of them are probably right. One of the puckish pollsters a while back asked young people whether they thought they'd ever see a UFO. And then in a separate question, he asked them whether they thought they'd ever see a Social Security check. And more of them thought they'd see a UFO than a Social Security check. I mean, it was fun, but it was very telling.
Yeah. According to your research, Kim, 69% of unmarried millennials say they would like to marry, but many lack what they deem to be a solid economic foundation. So how do they define that foundation? What do they need?
Well, I think they feel like they need a steady job with a steady income that enables them to live independently, to rent an apartment or buy a house, buy a car. You mentioned student loans earlier. That's a huge albatross around the necks of many, many young Americans coming out of school. So they want to get their loans under control. So they've got a whole series of things that they feel they need to establish or, you know, get some solid footing before they can enter into marriage. And we know from some recent polling that we've done that women are actually really very interested in finding a spouse or partner who has a steady job. And when you look at what's happening with young men and their employment rates and their wages, especially young men who haven't completed college, it's difficult sometimes for women to find men that meet those criteria, especially in this economic setting.
You know, we don't live in a vacuum. We live in a media world where we're getting pinged every 5 seconds on our phones with breaking news. So surely young men hear this either that way or through social connections, that if you don't go to school and get an education and have an income, you're not going to be very attractive to young women. So why isn't that motivating them?
That's a good question.
And for which there is no answer on the panel.
I'm not sure that I have an answer for that one. But one of the things that I think is interesting looking at all these days, I'm at the front end of the baby boom cohort, and we expected to have 2 to 3 jobs in our lifetimes.
Yeah.
And if you look at these young men and young women, they're expecting to change jobs. I'm not sure what the figure is. The average is about 8 to 10 times. And that makes you more vulnerable in terms of providing a steady income and those kinds of things. And I think that's also contributing to contributing to the delay in establishing a marriage and a home.
Crystal on Twitter writes, it's easier to meet people now. We have more options and don't have to settle in our relationships. And I'm assuming that she might be referring to the fact that we have a whole a generation of digital natives who now meet and socialize digitally. The only generation of adults who didn't have to adapt to digital technologies that we use today. They were raised on them, therefore they are the most avid users. And many of their relationships, it seems to me, are virtual, or at least bloom virtually on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and not necessarily face-to-face. Could that be one thing holding them back?
I don't know that it's holding them back. It's definitely changing. You know, it's given them a different sort of social structure and set of relationships than their parents had, certainly. And they do have a lot of connections, and they sort of form their own communities through the technology that they use. And this, you know, some people think that this has sort of separated them from more formal institutions. And it's true that maybe they do have more options and more opportunities to connect with a variety of people than than young adults did in the past when they didn't have these technologies. But I'm not sure exactly how that fits in with the trends that we're seeing in marriage.
One of the things that I noticed in terms of younger people is that they, and maybe I'm, this is just anecdotal and not based in data, but they seem to be dating in groups as opposed to going out one-on-one, again, as Kim says, as part of the new world in which they live. And I think that may be having an effect here.
Yeah, another thing, we're going to be doing some research on this soon, is online dating. I think it has, you know, brought about sort of more of a catalog approach to meeting people. And I think that, you know, young adults might feel like, because they have access to the whole world through social media and all this technology, that if they don't find the right person right away, then maybe they can, you know, there's so many other options out there. So maybe it has sort of widened the playing field. But we don't have real numbers to back that up.
Well, Crystal on Twitter, who talked about there are more options or more they can find people in different ways, has a follow-up. She says, we give ourselves time to establish who we are and find someone who complements us instead of completing us.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard that before?
Well, I think that it sort of goes back to Carlin's earlier point, too, about many more of these millennials have grown up in, you know, unstable houses or have lived through divorce, and that has maybe made them more wary about, you know, making sure that they make the right choice so that the marriage will last longer. And divorce rates have slowed down significantly. They really peaked around 1980 and have slowed. So, you know, there's some indication that as adults are marrying later, those marriages might be more long-lasting.
Let me ask another question. This is completely out of left field. It just popped into my head. The baby boom generation was also referred to as the me generation for years, but it is the millennials who seem absorbed with things like taking selfies and telling everybody where they are, what they're eating, what they're thinking, what they're experiencing in real time on social media. They are the center of their movie, and their life is a movie. So are they too self-absorbed to be married?
Again, I've not seen any data bearing on that. They are different in some significant ways. But one of the things that I've looked at, a lot of these millennials have had a high school civic service requirement. And you get the sense that they're going to be perhaps more involved in their local communities than earlier generations were. The baby boomers were all about solving the problems of the world. And I just get a sense that they're someone called them the we generation, and I'm not sure that that's accurate either. But I think, again, their experiences as high school students, it may be a kind of silver lining going forward if they're more active in their local communities because of that requirement. And they also think they can make more of a difference at the state and local level than they can at the national level. And so that might be a silver lining.
Well, let's talk about politics. We have to take a break. When we come back, let's talk about politics and millennials' attitudes towards government, which you, I think, Carlin, said they are suspicious of it, but they don't condemn it. I'm paraphrasing here, but we'll come back and talk about that and more characteristics of millennials and how they're changing marriage and the notion of American families in a second. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Charlotte Hounds, Charlotte's Major League Lacrosse team, fun for the whole family, at historic Memorial Stadium, final home game of the 2014 season, Friday, August 1st. Tickets and details at charlottehounds.com. An update on the investigation into the shooting down of a Malaysian airliner on the Russian-Ukraine border on the Diane Rehm Show in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock. Worldwide outrage over the tragedy and the escalating crisis in Ukraine. Coming up in just a few minutes. If you'd like to join our conversation about shifts in the American family and what the millennials are doing to change things, now's the time. WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks or Facebook or Twitter. We'll get you there, and we are coming right back.
I'm Silvia Poggioli. In Italy, we treat our cars like family. They stand by us and give us years of loyal service, no matter how many Roman relics we sideswipe. So when it's time to say ciao bella to your old car, donate it to us. You'll get a tax break and we'll tow it away free. turn your car into the programs you love.
Call 1-866-789-8627
or go to WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins with Kim Parker and Carlin Bowman. Kim is Director of Social Trends Research at the Pew Research Center. Carlin Bowman is Senior Fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. And we're talking about a Pew Research study on millennials and their attitudes towards marriage and the changing nature of the American family. Carlin, these young people seem to be independent in their relationships, their attitudes, their thinking. And we talked a little bit about their attitudes towards government. How do they view government?
Well, as I said, they're skeptical about government's ability, the federal government's ability to solve problems, but they want government to do many things. So it's a divided attitude in terms of their views about government. They're more confident in state and local governments than they are in the federal government, and they're very critical lately of performance.
So you want they want an activist government? Is that what I'm hearing you say?
I think in many ways they do, but they're skeptical about how well government can do, particularly the federal government.
Because another Pew report points out that although they tend to vote Democratic, they see themselves as political independents. So what will that mean for the way politics must be conducted going forward, particularly in an age where it seems that both parties are playing to their base, which is far right and far left?
Well, I'm not sure that they're up for grabs because, as you correctly said, they're voting Democratic. But will they stay home in 2014? It's possible that a lot of them will because they're just not as attached to politics. Over half of them call themselves independents, and I think that's a distinguishing feature of the millennial group overall. So both parties have got to make a play for them going forward, and the Republicans have a big deficit in this regard.
And
it's interesting. One of the findings that we had in our big report on millennials earlier this year was that they're the most likely of the four main generations to not see big differences between the two parties. So they're more likely to identify themselves as independents, although they tend to vote Democratic. But when they look at the parties, I think they just kind of throw their hands up and say, you know what, they're all the same.
Do they tend to vote Democratic because they're more liberal in their outlook or more libertarian in their outlook? And when they look at Republicans and particularly Republican social attitudes, they don't match with their own social attitudes.
Well, part of the reason that they tend to vote Democratic, it goes back to the composition of this generation. You know, they have a much higher concentration of racial and ethnic minorities, and those groups tend to be more Democratic. So that's part of it as well. And then it is also just in their views on issues like gay marriage and legalization of marijuana and, you know, a whole variety of issues, they tend to line up closer with the Democratic Party.
So what does that mean? Go ahead,
interestingly, there is an exception to this, and that is the issue of abortion. We haven't seen much change on that issue since 1973 among any generation. Those attitudes are hard as a rock, and you don't see greater liberalization, as many sociologists and others had expected on that issue, of the kind of liberalization that we've seen both on gay marriage and legalization of marijuana.
That's true.
John in Charlotte says, I read an interesting article in The Economist that says millennials are more conservative, better behaved than their baby boomer parents. They are harder working, take fewer drugs, commit less crimes, have fewer unplanned pregnancies. Does the panel agree, and does this have any implication for marriage and settling down?
I confess I haven't read the Economist article yet, though several people have mentioned it to me, and I do want to look at some of the statistics that they have about being hardworking and the like. I don't have data bearing on that, so it's very interesting and countercyclical in thinking in many ways.
Well, getting back to this question of attitudes and politics, Republicans, it seems to me they would face a severe problem if they want to attract these people because they would have to abandon some of their more conservative stances, would they not?
I don't know that they have to abandon them, and they also have some strengths, and that is a kind of fiscal conservatism that's very appealing to baby boomers. A new poll of millennials out about a week and a half ago from the Reason Rupee Foundation, again, a libertarian, Reason is a libertarian organization, but still they asked a series of questions about their outlook on fiscal issues, and they look quite conservative on those issues. So they are certainly socially liberal and perhaps fiscally conservative.
Yeah, and another thing to keep in mind is some of these differences that we see. To some extent, they're a sort of a snapshot of the generations, and there's a life cycle effect that will occur as well. And as millennials get older, eventually marry, settle down, start their own families, their views on some issues will inevitably become more moderate.
The Pew report also shows that millennials have low social trust, Carlin. They asked the question, generally speaking, would you say that most people can be trusted or that you can't be too careful in dealing with people?
And I've never known how to interpret that particular question, though it's a powerful one in the survey world. Maybe Kim has some ideas.
Okay.
Yeah, that was an interesting finding to us, and we were sort of, I wouldn't say surprised, but we were definitely intrigued by it, and it's something that we want to watch. Again, it may be something that changes over the course of the life cycle, and it also, interestingly, can change according to other circumstances and forces. So if we're in difficult economic times, that can reduce people's level of social trust. And if there are groups that are particularly hard hit, such as millennials, that might suggest, you know, some of the reason that they might be feeling skeptical or wary.
And Kim, do you think it's possible that they've been so cosseted as young people that they're just not as trusting of outsiders generally because their families have kept them so close? I've just wondered about that.
Yeah, that could be it. And I think it might also be just sort of the hardships that they're facing now and their level of sort of cynicism towards government and the parties. There's probably a lot of factors that go into it, and it'll be interesting to watch whether they pull out of that as they age or not.
Because the numbers are really interesting. According to your study, just 19% of millennials say that most people can be trusted. 31% of Gen Xers, who are just a little older than they are, say people can be trusted. 37% of the silent generation say so. And 40% of the boomers say people can be trusted. If people can't be trusted, according to millennials, why are they so eager to share everything on social media?
That's a good question.
That's very good.
And I think that they also feel like people share too much on social media, even though they themselves share everything. So they've got some figuring out to do.
Yeah. Now, Matt on our website says, I can't speak for all millennials, but I personally feel genuinely uncertain of the future. When I think of marriage, I think family. With family comes children. With the obstacles we stand to face, I'm not too interested in bringing more people into this mess. Also, I'm young. I'm trying to live my life. Independence is, and this is in capital letters, fantastic.
That goes
against something that the report says, that millennials are upbeat about the nation's future and have favorable attitudes toward business. He's not upbeat about it. Why are the rest of them upbeat about it?
Yeah. Well, and you know, another thing they're upbeat about, which is really quite striking given the economic circumstances in which they've come of age, they're very upbeat about their own personal financial futures. And you can compare them to Gen Xers when they were young and coming of age in a much stronger economy, and they're equally, if not more, optimistic. Millennials are. So even though they're living through difficult times now, they feel like eventually they'll get where they want to be and make the kind of money that they want and be able to live the life that they wish for. So that doesn't really address the comment that you raised, or it sort of goes against it. But I think they have a sense of optimism about themselves and about the country.
Gallup asks a question, and they haven't asked it recently. They ask about whether or not you think you'll ever be rich, and I'm always surprised, and perhaps this is a life cycle effect, that the youngest age cohort in the population is always much more optimistic about becoming rich than any other age cohort. And again, it's that youthful optimism, and that's a distinguishing life cycle feature.
Well, also, if they could forego that $5 Starbucks cup of coffee twice a day every day, they could be rich. If they put that money away by the time they're 60, they would be rich. So, for millennials, it seems, parenthood trumps marriage. So, this generation values parenthood. 52% of millennials say that being a good parent is one of the most important things in life. And just 30% say the same thing about marriage. Why is this disconnected suddenly?
Yeah, that was a really striking finding that we had in a report we did in 2011. And we looked back at Generation Xers when they were the same age as millennials were. And there was a gap there as well. Gen Xers were slightly more likely to place a high value on parenthood than on a successful marriage, but the gap was much smaller. So we didn't really know what to make of that gap among millennials, except that it sort of adds to this whole you know, transformation of family and de-emphasis on marriage that we've been seeing in, you know, all these broader demographic trends.
Has the Pew Research Center been doing these kinds of surveys on previous generations? In other words, do you have a way to go back and look at how the baby boomers viewed all of these things, how the Gen Xers viewed all of these things?
Well, we can on some questions, and we've been at Pew, we've been surveying since about 1987, so we have some nice, you know, 25-plus year trends. But then we often turn to other organizations like Gallup or CBS News and who've been asking questions longer, and we can get information in that way. But the key is you have to ask the exact same question in the exact same context to get a good read on it. And sometimes, you know, you can't always find – sometimes the most interesting question that you want to ask today wasn't asked in the past.
Right. I guess
– There were two marvelous studies that looked at baby boomers when they were in their 20s and 30, excuse me, when they were in their 30s, and then when they were, and asked them to think back to their views about issues when they were 18 to 24. And a lot of the questions were about the war in Vietnam. Were you a protester? How did you feel about the war? But they also asked a whole series of questions about family. And one of the most interesting things in it is they were asked how they'd changed in terms of going from that youthful age to the early middle age. And they talked about the conservatizing effects of family and marriage. It'll be interesting to see whether those continue with these generations, because that tends to be true. The old adage about if you're not a socialist at 20, you have no heart, or a conservative at 40, you have no head. whether that was Churchill or Disraeli, I've never been sure. But there is something about that you can see by going back and again replicating questions that have been asked in the few early surveys that we have looking at earlier generations.
Yeah, it is interesting too that, you know, this generation of millennials, if and when they do marry, marriage is such a different thing now than it was, you know, 40 or 50 years ago in terms of the roles that mothers and fathers are playing. And that's another big change and something that we've been studying a lot recently about how much more responsibility men are taking on in the home with childcare and housework as women have entered into the workforce, and this sort of distribution of labor is much different than it used to be. So marriage will look different for those millennials that do marry.
Well, given what you just said, and given earlier you said that millennials have a more open view of gay marriage or marriage between same-sex partners, is this defanging the opponents of gay marriage? I mean, they say that the family has always been this, marriage has always been this, and clearly that is not the case. Clearly, in the last 50 years, in our lifetimes, we have seen substantial changes.
Young people are certainly leading change in terms of gay marriage, and they have been for quite a while, but the rest of the society is coming along. Mm-hmm. Slowly, you've just seen enormous changes in attitudes of boomers and even the older generation. And we think that most people, many people know someone who's gay, has had a family member who is gay, and this may be something that's contributing to the very substantial change in attitudes that we've seen.
The Pew report indicates that millennials are less likely than older adults to say that a child needs a home with both a father and a mother to grow up happily, or that single parenthood and unmarried couple parenthood are bad for society. They don't think it is. On what do they base their beliefs?
Yeah, I think they still have a negative view of single parenthood, but less negative than other generations. And the same thing with, you know, a child needing two parents. I think part of it, again, is just the environment that they've grown up in. They look around them and they've seen different types of families, you know, functioning pretty well. And so they have a more open view and a different set of experiences that inform those opinions.
So how will these opinions that it's okay to have a single parent household or even be married and have children, not be married and have children, how will that impact society at large, community programs, demands on programs like food stamps and Medicaid going forward?
Well, that's difficult to say, but I do think that when you look overall at households where there are two parents and both of them are employed, those households are much better off financially and economically and able to provide for their children in a different way than single-parent households. So I think the economics of it suggests that if we see, you know, more children being raised in single families, there might be, you know, more families who are struggling.
And yet, for all the things we've talked about and all the attitudes about not necessarily, it's not necessary to be married to have children, etc., millennials, 70% of them say they want to marry. 74% say they want children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think, you know, things are changing, but there's still some things are still things are changing, but some things are still the same. And I think it's, you know, it's been a dramatic transformation, but it's taken many decades, and some of the sort of core structures are, you know, they're still in place. They're just less prevalent today.
So Bill emails, what I'm hearing is that this generation is a group of noncommittal, skeptical, apolitical, apathetic nuns. What does this mean for our country over the next 25 years? And is that a fair assessment of what we've been talking about?
Oh, I hope that's not the main takeaway. No, I mean, I think that they're, you know, they've come of age in a difficult set of economic circumstances. They have, you know, more choice and a broad trajectory ahead of them, and they have a lot to offer.
Well, if marriage is the foundation of society, as has been said many, many times in political circles, clearly the millennials don't see it that way. Who's right? And you don't have an answer for that. I'll let you off the hook on that one because we're out of time. Kim Parker is Director of Social Trends Research for the Pew Research Center. And Carlin Bowman is Senior Fellow for the American Enterprise Institute. Thank you both for the hour. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. Our producers are Aaron Kiever and Tim Ross. Our associate producer is Alexia Girodi, and the engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about archives, upcoming shows, and podcasts, or to continue the conversation online, visit our website at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks.
And support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Bradley Arendt Bolt Cummings, LLP, a full-service law firm at advising financial institutions and investors in all types of capital markets and lending transactions. Details at babc.com.